Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And thanks for listening today on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, number 10, and the letter S, Network. And thank you, Jason Haynes, the CEO and the director, the founder of the UR Tennis Network. Five great programs out there. John Denise, Florida High School Tennis, has been just a great platform and a forum to hear what's going on at the grassroots levels of competition. John's covering many, many aspects of tennis right now that will help us maybe reinvigorate high school tennis. It is the sleeping giant, as we have 350,000 youngsters playing high school tennis, but still only 17,000 playing tournament tennis. So John Denise, keep up the good work. Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program every Tuesday. Steve Clark's collegiate program. And I don't know when Steve's is on, folks. If you'll go to urtennisnetwork.com, Steve's program is always up there, but I forget when it is live. But I do know 2 hours from right now, Jason Haynes has his collegiate program as well. Folks, the mission of American Tennis, always I say that to stand up, speak out, and address those issues that may be a little bit uncomfortable, but daggone it, say what needs to be said. Edmund Burke's quote is my favorite, that all that it takes for evil to prosper are the wrong things sometimes to prosper, or for good men or good women to do nothing. It's very, very important. Stand up. All you got to do is stay professional. Address issues. Don't address people. If you address issues, you can pretty much say what needs to be said. But this is definitely a time not for tweenerism or wienerism, as I said in my last program when we talked about avoiding tweenerism. Yeah, don't get caught in the middle there without an opinion. Go one way or another. Folks, this is a time when we really need your help. Tennis is struggling as far as the numbers. If you want to talk today, we've got two fantastic guests, and this is going to be a great show. I'm very, very excited because of the respect I have for these men from afar, but then also up close and personal with my good friend, John Eagleton. But listen, if you want to call in and just ask a question or be on the program, call 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. My website is chuckcreasy.net. I'm trying to keep up with some writings, and you can get any of the American Tennis Radio show. But, folks, we have a great program today. The people are just it's really great to have. I think, Gene, are you on the line? Gene Mayer?
Yes, I am.
This is a great privilege for me. Gene, I wrote down here when I was trying to write stuff about you, the first things that popped in my head, never flaunted, always respected, Gene Mayer. I hope that I think that might be close. I don't know. But, you've walked.
That's an awfully good compliment.
In tennis. Well, doggone it, respect and trust have to be earned. And Gene Mayer, anywhere you go in the country and in the world, it's sort of the underlying tone that respect is there. It's for class. It's for just the way you've always handled situations. And it's just, John said I met you a year ago with him when he was first getting his technique tennis going. If I did, I apologize. I was probably just walking around, not concentrating well enough. But thanks a lot for coming on, man. Really
happy to be on.
Thanks. And John Eagleton, you're on there, and a good friend for many years. And John, let me say this about the respect too. I knew you as a great player when I first started coaching. And I mean all of the things that you've done. And I got to read some of Gene's things. But John, everybody knew you were the number three junior in the world. Everybody knew you were an All-American in Miami there when I first started coaching. And you played all those years on the pro tour. You coached over 20 professionals. But John, I got to say this: the trust and respect absolutely came when I saw that you all those years working later in the trenches with so many kids, and you treated everybody the same. But thanks a lot for being on, and I want to really, really do the best I can to help people learn about your latest. I don't want to say innovation. I don't want to say discovery. I want to say fundamental teaching tool, Technitenna. So thanks for being on, John.
Yeah, thanks. That was a long introduction, Chuck. I appreciate it. We do have a long history together. I think, we have Gene here. I think there's a lot of good mutual respect here. And so it's probably an interesting threesome. You have Gene Mayer, former number one in the world in doubles and four in singles. You're probably one of the greatest all-time college coaches. And I'm in some ways, from another country abroad, so it's probably a pretty interesting threesome. We could probably come up with some conclusions.
Well, Gene, I got to admit that I had to go back and read up on you a little bit, especially I'm glad we got on because we had to crunch it here pretty quickly. But, daggone it, I know that people out there, everyone knows your name. But you have never been flaunted, or you've never, let me put it this way. My mama used to say that the world promises you buckets of rhinestones, but God gives you the chance to make one diamond with your life. All of the accomplishments that you have had, number four in the world, two Grand Slam championships in doubles, all those years on pro tennis, taught only by your father, you and your brother, the respect has been the undercoat, and we had the daggone rhinestones haven't been shined up much there. Am I pretty close?
I think that all has a lot to do with upbringing. I started to play at 2 years old, and my dad was my sole coach, and I think one of the things that can be sadly missing in current entourages on the tour is someone who gives you very honest answers. And I could always count on my dad telling me exactly what he thought, both not just in terms of how I played, but how I carried myself on the court, the respect that I showed to others, even in a number of times he would even comment, do you realize the way that you even questioned that line call, which wouldn't even occur to too many people, but even the tone and the way that you present. And so when you've learned respect for the game and for others, it becomes a part of you, and then the idea that you've achieved in a sport doesn't necessarily take away from that. But I think in many ways that was as much in my blood as playing tennis or wanting to play Davis Cup or any of those things, which really were a product of the all the years with my dad.
Yeah, and he, right in the middle of your junior career, didn't he set you out for like a six-month period or some time? He just said, honor the game. The game won't honor you if you don't honor it or something. I mean, is that true?
It wasn't a break during it at all. But, I mean, it was certainly early on. I can remember the first time I lost to someone who was my age growing up in the juniors. I was 13. And I played a much bigger guy. His name was Horace Reed.
Yeah. Yep.
And so he was a big, strong guy, and I lost to him in the semifinals of an Easter Bowl, and I must have thrown my racket 20 times. And I don't know that I was as angry as I was just like, does this really happen kind of thing? And my dad wasn't even there, and I got home, and my mom had filled him in, and he asked, how did things go? And I said, not well. And then he said, I just wanted you to know that if you're not going to play for 6 weeks, and if that ever happens again, you're not playing anymore. And I was already mouthing the words, you can't do that, and I realized he can do that. And that was the kind of tone, that it wasn't just about winning matches at any cost. And funnily, fast forward many years later, I was getting ready for a match with Bjorn Borg in Denver, Colorado, and we were in the locker room before, and there was a delay, and we were talking, and I asked him about his behavior, and he recounted a story very similar, where his rackets were locked away in a closet because of behavior, and look at what Bjorn did. So I think there are those opportunities early on to say there are real opportunities for character and growth here, not just becoming a better hitter of the tennis ball and winning more matches.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd go back, all I've been talking about probably the last 6 months is how upset I am with the fact that we're not honoring the game. I mean, we have so many referees. Back when you were playing in those years, you remember we didn't used to have referees actually in college tennis. It was just all done with the code. The coaches
right.
were supposed to, the home coach was the referee. In junior tennis, it was the code. You honored the game, or basically you didn't get to play. And but I'm glad to know it was only 6 weeks instead of 6 months, but you can see how those legends get bigger.
Right. Well, maybe it was my quote that it felt like 6 months. It felt more like 6 years of that time,
yeah.
Realizing rackets were gone, no tennis balls, and it was not a fun time, but it was some of the best learning time in terms of coming to grips with tennis being much bigger than about me and what I wanted and my goals. The kind of feeling you have walking into a Wimbledon or going onto center court when players seem very small and the game and the history of the game seems awfully big, and you're put into place very quickly. Your notions of yourself being very much larger than they are, and the game and its history and all the great players who paved the way before become very large in your eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you started, the open era wasn't on, and then money got into it, and then promoters got in it, the manufacturers got in it, and everything became sort of a marketing deal. Gosh, the academies, that's a whole new issue. I mean, how... Well, you know, people transported their kids down to Florida, moved to Florida, and the academies and everything became about that. And Well, I mean, that was the evolution, but, you know, now I think maybe we're reaping the benefits of not honoring the game as we should have, you know. So, John, any, you
it
got
takes
any quick
a long
thoughts
time
there?
For that to manifest.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Hey, what, Dave, well, I want to ask you one more thing, Gene, before, you know, get a few comments from John. You broke your back, too, right? I mean, how, did you broke your back one time when you were
yes,
doing your career?
Yes, it was actually small connector bones coming off the spine. I was going over to the Australian, and I was in Hawaii practicing, and I was with Raul Ramirez, and my wife and I he and his fiance at that time, the fellow who we were training this facility had horses and said, "Why don't you ride these horses?" We were going up a hill. My saddle wasn't on, and I twisted and sort of started to go under the horse and then went to get free. And in not from the impact, but from dislodging, I actually fractured those small bones from pulling the muscle away and was sidelined for some time. So it was actually a break in the back, but it wasn't the kind of back break that many might think of.
Well, the adversity, I mean, every athlete has to overcome some adversities, but it's fantastic. I'd like one more thing here. Your dad, did you learn two hands of both sides? Is it your father
yes,
teach
both
all
my
both?
Brother Sandy and I started at two, and that was the only way to hold the racket.
Okay. You know, I teach all juniors two hands on both sides just so they get unit turns and stuff, and I don't like those smaller rackets. Anyhow, that's another issue there, but listen.
But you
I
highlighted, that's a huge teaching tool. What you highlighted, Chuck, I think is exactly right, that even for people who aren't necessarily going to be two-handers, the idea of rotational turn, which will segue very much into John and the teaching system, but that rotationality people grasp often much more quickly with two hands on the racket, and with one they almost feel, well, I can just lay the wrist back and just have it be in the ready position, where that rotational power is really felt. You can't really cheat with two hands the way that you can with one.
Exactly. I've always felt teaching kids with one hand starting out, even if the rackets are light, they end up using their hands with don't use the body, don't use the rotation. Every time, 100% of the time, if I use two hands on both sides, the kids learn a unit turn, and then just get them to separate their hands a little bit later, but they lock in the big muscles early in their teaching. But how did your dad teach? Did he do that by mistake or just by chance or?
No, it was really a work of two-handedness was not very popular really at the time, and it was purely a necessity of with the weight of wood rackets the way they were. It was a paddle at almost a paddle size at two and by three with a regular racket, and it was the only way to hold on to a heavier wood racket at the time. And then interestingly, my brother became a one-hander off both sides, and since my forehand was my best shot, which is often what makes people doubly two-handed, I stayed with both of them. But it was devised as a means of being able to have us play as much as we did at the age of two or three.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And good fundamentals never go away. Dang it. I mean, people don't, the marketing people sure wouldn't like to hear all about all that, but I'm a big proponent of what your father taught you. And, you know, so listen, I really thank you so much for being on today. I want to get John involved here, and then I want to go to a bigger issue about American tennis, Gene. And
sure.
Definitely. People are in panic mode, but the game is bigger than us. I love what you said that. You know, when our players get upset, I'll always tell them, hey, this is not the Joe show. This isn't the Gene show. You know, it's about tennis.
Right.
You are a participant in the game, something much bigger. It was very touching what you said about Wimbledon and just being a part of that. And I'm hoping all our young people who listen to the show can relate to this and honor the game or it will not honor you, you know. So, but I want to go there and talk a little bit about that in a second. But John, okay, so John, look, I mean, for the last 5 years since I've seen you, everything, you've been on a mission to learn, probably to perfect and to show other people what's going on with the game of tennis, the modern game. It's changed. I mean, you used to be able to go out and watch the wood rackets. And by the way, both you guys, you know, I've told people often I played tennis for the three drugs I used to get for playing tennis. Now, listen before, but the dopamine, the adrenaline, and endorphins. The dopamine from making good contact on those old wood rackets, you used to get a buzz like nobody's business, and you would search for it. You would do it over and over and over again and search for it. And then the adrenaline from the competition, and then the endorphins when you finally got in good enough shape to compete and for long periods of time and be in shape. But, John, the game changed. I mean, you used to be able to go out and watch 12 players and say, yep, no, maybe, yep. Now you can't tell the difference. All of them are just smacking the ball, and nobody's seeing the subtleties. But you've come up, John, I mean, this is going to be revolutionary, I think, not from the standpoint that people don't get bits and pieces of it, but you've put it all together in your Technitennis program. I'm glad you've got a pseudo sort of catchy name there, and that should be people be talking about. But could you give this history a little bit of the evolution, John, and where you're headed with this?
Well, yeah, I've been at it for a while. It probably starts 8-9 years ago. I think you were hitting on it that, you know, when we used to go to a tournament, we would say a fun thing we'd like to do is try to figure out who was going to be the pros, and we could normally come up with four or five guys. But I suddenly realized that the juniors or the people that I would see at academies or at tournaments, that there was a disconnect between professional tennis and junior tennis. And as it progressed through the last, you know, years, American tennis and really hasn't developed the players it should develop when you've got that many great athletes in this country. And so I, you know, started making notes and then wrote a book. And at the end of the day, I guess, came up with a total package of how to teach the modern day game so that there would be a new foundation or a new starting point where pros can almost, you know, we were in linear power, and the world changed to rotational power. There's just so many things happening, and it's happening so fast. So I wrote an entire package. We have a full live Technitennis, you know, video production, shot in movie quality. We took that in a book. I'm training pros, but the whole point is to develop players, you know, and get people to teach the way the pros play, because that's the key. You've got to teach, and you got to look at the top of the people. If you're not teaching the way the pros play, then you've got, you know, you got issues. I think for the modern day game, a lot of people try to put bits and pieces together, and you kind of need to understand the whole process. Yeah.
Well, John, real quick, let me jump in there. The rackets sort of made it evolve, right? I mean, I heard used to go watch the evolution of kids. It wasn't so much for about 8 to 10 years when the big rackets came out, everybody was still using linear strokes in the 80s. But then little by little, the younger kids, you'd see them open up and taking full swings and doing the circular rotation. And I called the 90s sort of first strike tennis decade, where people just tried to knock the crud out of the ball on the first strike. And the movement finally in the late 90s, these Federer guys and all of the top players figured out how to move so that ball striking didn't overcome movement. So, I mean, the rackets caused it, didn't it? I mean, the evolution instead of the – and we've sort of had to try to figure it out from that. Would you say that the equipment caused it?
I would say that I think the equipment is part of it. You know, I think I remember playing a match when I saw my first big racket, and the only strategy I had was to hit the ball hard at it because I thought the thing was so big it wouldn't be able to maneuver it. I think the rackets did is serve and volleys had a much more difficult time. It became easier and easier to hit bigger ground strokes. I'm not so sure that big rackets really help serve and volleys. It helped ground strokers more, and from there the shots became bigger and bigger. But I was looking at a Bork, Laver video, and, I mean, those guys already were evolving the modern-day game. They were already changing the game. It's a slow process of the game changing as people, athletes are developing better. I think that's one thing. As they're getting faster and they're strong, and the speed of the game picked up. So maybe the easiest way to understand it is that when we've returned serve, we've always been in a base, right? And because it was coming at 100 miles an hour in the 70s and even probably in the 60s. When we were at the net, the ball was coming fast. We operated in a base, which is the fastest, most efficient, or the most athletic way to react to anything. You do that in all sports. It's like if you're a goalkeeper, you kind of get in the base. But what happens is the ground stroke, the speed of the ball started picking up. And when it started getting 60, 70, 80, we needed a new movement system. You needed something that could function. And if you're linear, so everybody thinks it's just linear power, but if you turn and step, you really just not only are going to have problems dealing with the high speed of the ball, you're going to have problems moving to the ball, and that requires nobody has enough talent to overcome that. I haven't seen anybody actually overcome it.
John, the symmetry was lost. The ball striking overcame movement. I mean, they used to say that it used to take 4 seconds for the ball to go to you and come back. Now it's 2.1, so it's twice as fast, basically. So what you're saying is that forget it if you didn't learn how to move better. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think you have to be in an open stance movement. I think you have, with technique tennis, we have the O attack, which is the start of the open movement. So you have to learn the open stance movement. Then you have to learn how to move out of the center court, and then you have to learn all the different movements that you need to execute the shot. So it's very important to have a starting point and have a movement system where you can not only work with it on the court, and with technique tennis, we have match the training off the court. You have to be in a Djokovic type of movement system, else it's not gonna, you're not gonna function. In many ways, there's not that many differences in the way Nadal and Djokovic and even Serena Williams. When I asked Richard a couple of years ago, he said he's been in that type of movement, which we call duplication of movement. Which is both sides of the body. They were doing that since they were five, and the results have been pretty good for them.
John, I, as a coach, I've gotten to a place where you try to attack movement more than you do strokes sometimes. The rackets allow the strokes. The rackets allow for a lot of messed up, I shouldn't say messed up, but strokes that aren't fundamentally sound. But the movement, for example, in the women's, there's really no offense other than Serena's or maybe Sharapova where the offense overcomes the defense. So you basically, with women's tennis for sure, have to attack the movement, but men's tennis has become that way as well, would you say?
Yeah, I think the women are, they're very well trained today. I think if you look at it, there's very few top young, players that are on the WTA Tour. There's more and more players that have been around a little longer. The players, with this movement, people become a lot more physical and they have years of training. And so that the women are hitting the ball better than ever, but they figure out how to play it a little flatter, So they in similar movement system, they're rotating, they're hitting, some of them are hitting heavy balls. And I think that the women's tennis has become very physical and a lot more athletic, and there's more depth, and you see more and more different people beating people, for the exception of Serena, which is probably the greatest women's athlete ever. But, yeah, the movement, the women have changed it, but they are playing a little bit flatter. There's probably different reasons for it. Maybe the serve or the point starts at a lower height because maybe the second serve aren't that high up. But they're hitting some very big balls, and the level is certainly way up there, yeah?
Yeah, and the Technique Tennis program is out now. Is it out where people can find it online and find out more about it, John?
Yeah, techniquetennis.com. Our app is live on the App Store. It's techniquetennis.com. The app is live.
T-E-C-H-N-E, correct?
Yeah, techniquetennis.com. Yeah, and technique is a Greek word kind of for art and performance. It's kind of, Nike is also a Greek word, and we had to come up with a name, and there's not many ways to change tennis.
Well, I want to ask Gene about this in a second, but John, how is this different than the programs out? I mean, everybody's sort of, if you go out there, are the instructional programs not doing it right, or sort of doing it right, or some of them are doing it right, or what's the deal? Why should people go to this instead of just what they're hearing at other places? That's
well, well maybe I can touch on that a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, Gene. I mean, I think because you're, I'm the creator of the whole thing. It might be good, Gene, if you can touch. I will just say that it works for all levels, and clearly, people want to play the way the pros play. They want to look like the pros, and I don't know where people came up with an idea that people don't want to look like pros. You know.
Well, you know, John jokes with me that I was in some ways one of the most difficult people for him to sort of win over and convince, not because I found problems with it, but because I'm quite analytical in my approach to tennis and stroking and very big, Chuck, as you've said, on fundamentals and building those sound fundamentals. So it was a lot of discussion that we had and a lot of comparison with videos of current players in terms of how they hit. And I think what sets this apart is not, as you've said earlier, Chuck, that it's something revolutionary and John Eagleton had this flash of brilliance one night and it all came to him, but more the time and effort that has been put into it. This is really the only system that we know of that is as comprehensive, that has taken basically the aspects from the movement to the stroke production and hitting of the ball, broken it down into steps which are distilled first from what the pros do, but now laboriously in terms of production and video shoots and editing have gone systematically through the sequences of learning in a way that people can really get what the pros do. And so all of the time and all of the money and all of the hours that were spent, which started with John's mind, but it became John's blackboards that then went through this. So there are other interesting and in some ways helpful videos out there that talk about aspects of the game of tennis, but we don't know anything else that is a system in the same way that people have, even if they had it locked in their brains, spent the time to do the storyboards, do the production, produce even the videos, a book, everything that goes into this entire learning process in such a way that is both helpful to the coach from a teaching side, but also helpful to the student in terms of reference and for both to be able to work together and compare the existing game of the student to the models as exhibited in the videos.
You know, Gene, you're known for your detail work, how you see the game technically. It is confusing. There's what happens. It's an evolution. I think we were always trying to play catch up because the equipment did change everything, didn't it? I mean, and it's sort
yes,
of like
not just because you mentioned the rackets, but you know, in many ways, the rackets are not all that different from the rackets that I was using in the 80s at the time, which were already graphite and oversized. But one of the huge innovations of late, which really corresponds to the ability for the pros to do what they do, and they hit as hard but with as much spin, is the new string technology. Of late, the string technology and the revolution of the ball is so much more dramatic. A Borg who spun a lot at our time pre the newer string technology to what a Rafa can do now is dramatically different. So absolutely the technology has helped in the development, both speed of ball, spin of ball, and that part of the whole sort of scientific development of the game has brought enormous changes.
Should they have put specifics on that early on, or should they just let it go? I mean, it might be too late now, but
well, it was hard to know at the time. Many people, because I was one of the first. The first year I was at Wimbledon, I was the only one with an oversized racket in the main draw, and the next year there were 68. So whether they thought it was a good idea or this guy could only be winning if it's his racket or whatever was going on, there was a giant transition there, and then ground stroking became easier with the oversized racket and all of those changes. Right now, it's almost catch-up ball. Knowing what we know now, it may have been reasonable to limit in some ways. But it's interesting, as we've looked at the current players in the game, many they're extraordinary athletes, but the best players at the top of the game, particularly on the men's side, are not necessarily at all what we would call giant hitters of the ball. They are great movers. They're great. Their stroke production is outstanding, but their consistency, their physicality, and their ability to play defense is absolutely off the charts. So many of the percentage things are still winning, and the best players are, in many ways, not wowing you by necessarily breaking the radar gun. Even the way Federer serves is not to light up the radar gun, but to get the most free points. So it's interesting how the players have adapted and wisely used the technology and the modern game, but in a very high percentage way.
Well, it's become I stand up and beat my chest and cheer when I see the finals of, U.S. Open or French Open, how physical it is and what a tremendous sport that it is, how athletic it is. And I'm scared to death of the dumbdown. I call it Project Dumbdown, what I feel like we're doing to the game, I got to go to commercial. If you guys hang on, I want to talk a little bit about what we need to do to try to get people fired up again about picking up our game, because it is more than an after-school activity. It is more than an event, just a hangout event. It is a tremendous, tremendous sport for body, mind, spirit, and everything about it. So hang on. We'll be right back. Gene Mayer, John Eagleton, and American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years' experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is Coach ChuckCreasy.net, and go to ChuckCreasy.net for summer camp information, my books, my writings, my radio shows. And folks, it's more about just how you hit the ball. It's the physical, mental, and emotional aspects of the game. We also cover momentum control, one of the only places that will teach your youngsters momentum control and how to do the next right thing on the court. See ChuckCreasy.net.
USA, he won't buy nothing and he can't fix with WD-40 and a America.
And we're making them in America. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and we have Gene Mayer and John Eagleton, and we're talking about modern tennis and technitennis. John, I've got you back on here, don't I? I want to make sure I've got a few phone calls coming
here, Chuck.
Up here. I want to make sure. Okay, Gene, I got you on?
Sure.
Great, okay. I've got another caller. Just hang on there. We'll get you on in a second. John, I want to talk about American tennis here, but again, people should go to technitennis.com if they want to learn about the program. And I mean, I've seen the videos, I've seen the book. And
yeah,
it's
the app, Chuck. The app is live on the App Store. Technitennis.com is a live app on the App Store that they can download. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well. Thanks a lot. But all right, guys, got a couple questions. Gene, first of all, if you were starting A to Z very quickly, A to Z teaching a youngster right now, say you've got a youngster and they're yours, they're putty for you, they're 7, 8 years old, what would you do? I mean, how would you go through it very quickly? I know everybody's different and they're unique, but give us a Gene Mayer lesson sort of how the next 5 to 7 years should shape out.
Well, I think, you know, it certainly depends somewhat on the age that you're starting at, and that will vary, but I'd say there are probably still similarities. One of the, I think, important aspects to start, you really need to build a foundation. And really, the two basic foundations that I would be concerned about, one is stroke production, which is not necessarily at first hitting great balls, but building a platform from which the great strokes can ultimately come. So I would be very concerned with stroke production. Something like technitennis that John has developed really does the service of, because it's very hard to just watch, certainly with a naked eye, someone like Roger Federer hit the ball and tell everything that's going on. So there's something wonderful about videos that show even what is hidden from the naked eye. So the idea of being able to then have a progression to follow, not just the right parts of stroke production, but in sequence, something that builds, as you've said, really the most effective body utilization. One of the sad things that I see out there is that so many instructors are not necessarily aware of what actually the pros are doing. So now the pros, who are gifted athletes and spend lots of time doing this, are making their lives easy. And very often the amateur player, for a game that's difficult and very demanding early on, are making their lives difficult. And so I think a tool like this that helps both a coach and a student in learning is enormously important to build that stroking foundation. And the second part is that I would do everything, both on the court and largely off the court, to build athleticism. And that can involve even the use of other sports, cross-training, depending on age, whether there are, you know, let's say weights are not something that really work early on. But all of the developments of the kinds of physical programs, and each one, Roger Federer's is very different than Djokovic's. He spends less time on the court, Roger, more time off the court because of his age. So all of these need to be tailored and customized, but I would do everything to build athleticism, ball awareness, movement, reaction time, all of those training things as the foundation, and from then the springboard to ultimately be able to develop a playing style and a competitive mentality. But normally, those building blocks need to be in place first.
Any age differentiation or just readiness? What's your feel on that?
Well, I would say that in general, the amount of time and the demanding nature of the program will increase as someone is older. It also depends whether let's say for me, since I had a coach who was my father, we could start a lot earlier because he could handle me emotionally and he knew me inside and out. An outside coach can't potentially start as early. But I'm a huge proponent of starting early to build a game stroke production-wise and with the physicality early, so you can get to the very fun part, I find, of what I call the chess match that is tennis, where it goes from how do I hit the ball to what do I do with the ball and how do I use the court and how do I dissect this opponent's game and what kind of stroke patterns do I use. That, to me, was the most compelling part of tennis. And unless you get the rest of this foundational stroke production and movement down, you can't really proceed to the what is the most fun part until that foundation is such that you own it, your stroke production, your precision, your variety, all the shots are in place. And now it's like a wonderful symphony that comes together when you watch someone like Roger Federer, and it looks so easy, everyone says. Well, it's because the pieces are so good and the knowledge of what to do is so good that it does look relatively easy, even though if you ask Roger, he's working pretty hard out there, but having done it so much. So I am a fan of as early as possible, starting in different ways, making it fun, making it interesting, doing off-court things. My dad was a huge proponent. We used table tennis to learn things. We used billiards to learn angles. There was lot. I wasn't even aware at the time how much of this was feeding into learning the game. So there are lots of very interesting things that can be done beyond just hitting more forehands and backhands.
Yeah, Gene, Bobby McKinley always talks about he and his brother, who was the guy in St. Louis, but he taught him ping pong for a year, table tennis for a year. What was the guy's name? He was a great coach. Bill Price? Bill Price, I think
it was. Yeah, I think that was the name, because I know like Trey Walkie was from there and Jack Bort. There were a number from St. Louis, and they were all great ping pong players, and they talked about learning that and, you know, judging the ball, ball speed, ball spin, all of that. A number of those are very good tools to enhance the kind of skills that transfer well to tennis.
Right. Do y'all feel that we're teaching, get to the competitive part of it. It's very aggravating for me as a coach that our kids, we're breeding or developing hard triers, great kids, but maybe we don't have the competitors out there that we need. What are your thoughts? John, what are your thoughts?
I think that America, in all of sports, I believe that the competitors are out there. I just feel like if you give them the right system and, like Gene said, the right fundamentals early on, and you teach them where they have the right movement, the right technique, and they grow in an organized way and they become better. But if what happens is, if you're a little bit old school, a little bit behind technique, then when they get older, they kind of fall on the wayside. And tennis, I don't care what they say, if you're not having fun or not doing well, people quit. I think the end result hasn't been good for a lot of players. So I feel like if we can get them in the right techniques, like Gene was saying, and then we have success. And then I think success breeds everything else. But if you're losing, that doesn't really breed enthusiasm,
I say we're fishing with a barbless hook. We get a lot of kids to try the sport, don't get them hooked on it. Guys, I got a couple people been holding here for a while. Let me see if I can get area code 412-298-1870. Are you on the line, caller? Would you like to talk to the guest?
Coach, it's Alex Lezak. How are you?
Alex, how are you, man?
Coach Alex,
I'm good.
Lezak,
good to talk to you.
Good. I'm glad you met on. I'm surprised.
I'm catching a little lunch here, and as a physical education teacher, I'm at school and I'm eating lunch right now. But I love what Gene's saying about just the kids have to be experienced. They have to have a diet of movement that where they can just develop that athleticism, that coordination. And it's true, you have to plan long term. You can't just plan for 1 month or a year. You really have to start from the beginning and plan long term. But I do have a question for you guys. So as a high school tennis coach, and I know Coach Creasy always says that high school it's a sleeping giant. Do you think that technique tennis? I feel like we need to get high school coaches that are just better at coaching and better at developing players. Do you guys think that the technique tennis could be a solution for this?
Well, can I answer that, you know?
Sure,
yeah, we have a meeting with the Texas. I think Texas is sort of the model of high school tennis in America. I mean, they've got booster clubs. It's just the biggest, most serious deal. I think California is next, and then Florida falls in that area. But, yeah, we're going out to the high school coaches, and we feel like if we can get technique tennis in the hands of the high school coaches and give them an easy system that they can present to the players, because those guys have as an important a role as we have. They actually have access to more people, and we can get them to show a simple method of how to train in the modern day game and have results, and then they can use the videos we have so they can get an easy understanding. So high school tennis, I feel like, could be one of our biggest markets, and we are speaking at the high school coaches tennis at Horseshoe Bend in December and launching there. But the high school tennis is a big deal. I think that's
fantastic.
Something that's been overlooked.
John, I'm going to jump in there. John, this is the guy that can get you in Pennsylvania too. Alex Slezak, what you've done up there, Coach Slezak, is unbelievable. You basically have a tremendous following, over 100 kids a week at your camps. And you're teaching hundreds of kids tennis just purely because you are a teacher. You love to work with kids. But, John, maybe we'll hook you two guys up, and he can get you up there to Pennsylvania as well.
Yeah,
I actually hooked up with John. We know each other quite well. I've actually through you, Chuck,
okay.
We actually got connected together. And, yeah, it's great. So, yeah, I was wondering. I really think that, you know, if we can just raise the level of coaching that's out there in high school, I think it will stop making it such a, you know, basically an after-school activity. And I think it will make it, you know, a sport again. And once it's a sport again, I think that will grow the game, and it will grow participation, and it will push everybody towards excellence.
Thanks a lot,
yeah,
Alex.
Fully agree.
Fully agree. Alex, yeah, nice to hear from you, Alex.
Yeah. You know, guys, we had a program a week or so ago on Florida high school tennis, and we talked about the level of competition. A couple things. Well, there's the instructional aspect, and, John, that's a big void. Everybody talks about, well, we have the assistant football coach has to teach high school tennis or something, but this could be a good and caring man. There's a guy down in South Georgia, Dan Vonk, who is doing tremendous things. He works with kids in five counties in South Georgia. So the instructional part's part of it, but the other part of that is that the competition, I've been arguing for years that team tennis is a good participation endeavor, but it does not breed excellence for development. We need more tournament tennis opportunities for high school kids. For example, as a college coach, I would never go see a dual match in high school because it's such a, you know, it's basically dumbed down. But competitive tournaments allow kids to springboard in one weekend. Any quick thoughts there? I've got another caller here, though. Any quick thoughts, Gene, on the difference?
Yes, I think improving the quality of coaching is a huge problem, not just in high school tennis, but across the board. And technique tennis can assist with that. But the competition side, I think, is important, not in abbreviated format that isn't really played, but real opportunities for competition.
Right, the abbreviated format. If any of you go to any of my programs, for the last 4 years we've been battling abbreviated scoring formats. Easier to pick up is easier to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down. We should honor the game. I mean, on and on and on. We have 132 years of our scoring system the way it is, and the tragedy for us to think that all of a sudden we're going to come up with something that's going to hyper-stimulate the sport of tennis, it's really upsetting. Let me go to this caller here. We haven't got that much time. Area code 828-266. You're on the line. You got a question?
Hey, Chuck. Yeah, Chuck, this
that's
is Mike Crinoldo.
Mike Crinoldo.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike. You've got Gene Mayer and John Eagleton on the phone.
Yes, I got into the conversation late after I just got done with class. But one of the things I really appreciated that Gene and John were talking about, they kind of coordinated it, was the fact that motivation is a huge issue in getting the kids to continue to want to play. And, you know, I liked what Gene was saying about his dad. And I remember Gene was just, his tactics and strategies on the court were fantastic. And, you know, of course, John was a wonderful player as well. But, you know, having learned the angles from different sports, allowing the transfer of learning to occur from one sport to the other, you know, can be a really big issue when you're teaching. And you can, if you learn about what the background of your players, you know, other things that they've done, and it doesn't just have to be sports, you know, you can bring that into the learning of the skills for tennis, especially strategically and tactically. And so, you know, if you can find other activities that make it fun for the kids and still have them learning, I think, you know, it lends itself to what John was talking about as far as providing the motivation for them to want to continue to come back and practice. So I thought they both brought up some really key issues and some really interesting points about that.
Mike, just one comment.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, I mean, there's
Mike,
no
just
doubt.
One
yeah.
Comment about Mike Rinaldo. Guys, I use his quote all the time about without innovation, where would the Fosbury flop have ever had to come from? So you have to have structure with innovation. And Mike is a professor of kinesiology and sports science for many, many years here. He's a great player at his own right, University of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But Mike, just any real quick things about how to keep creativity and innovation like the Fosbury flop, but still to keep good fundamentals. That's always the paradox. What would you say?
Well, if you look at all the different sports that are out there, you know, we talked about swimming, the movement from the breaststroke to the butterfly and the Fosbury flop. It's not, you know, having the structure such that people can't adapt a little bit and be flexible enough to, you know, work within what works for them. So, you know, you notice that not everybody has the exact same strokes. And I think Gene was alluding to, you know, Bjorn Borg and his, you know, the different strokes that he produced. It's heavy topspin, the two-handed backhand came about. I mean, you've got to allow players and coaches to be flexible enough to, to develop what works. I mean, it's not the same thing. It's not perfect for everybody. I mean, within a certain limitation, yes, but I think you need to allow learners to adapt a little bit.
Yes.
Base fundamentals
and then
allow creativity. Good, Gene.
Yes, I think that is where a good coach knows the fundamentals that everyone shares, that whether it's Nadal who hits his forehand a certain way and Federer, there are a number of ways that they are quite similar. Their grip is different. The amount of spin they use is different. So a coach that knows the fundamentals well enough knows these must be present in terms of movement and body utilization, but it allows for creativity. As an example, my brother was straight ahead, serve and volley, one-handed off both sides. I played from the backcourt, served and volleyed, varied speeds and spins, double two-handed. My brother always joked, you never hit two balls in the row the same way. So allowing for personality and creativity, but the fundamentals of our strokes were identical. You know, body usage, racket preparation, other kinds of matters. And I think that's where also Technitennis, which doesn't look to impose, this is how, you know, watch Roger Federer and you have to look exactly like he does, but learn from Roger and from Rafa and Andy and Serena. How do they produce their power? What do they do? How do they use their bodies and rackets and swing? And now, how can you benefit? But now you do have a custom look to your stroke, and knowing where the latitude is hugely important.
Yeah,
Gene,
Mike
off there. But, John, we're going to stay on about three or four more minutes here. John,
say something on what Gene said. I think what's important for people to understand about Technitennis, and Gene was just hitting it there, we created a system and we organize it in a sequential way that people can use it to coach. We're looking at it, when you put this in the hand of another talented coach, we're just trying to give them a better foundation of where to start and say that, hey, there's certain things you just have to do, and from there, use your talent. You know, and everything we talk about in technique terms, it starts with your custom base, your custom movement, fit the racket into your movement so that things are designed for the player. There's not just one way to do it, but there are some commonalities. I'm stealing that word from Gene because I didn't know that word before. Thank you, Gene. You educated me once. Yeah? But some commonalities of foundation and stroke fundamentals that you have to have because else you just won't have the results. Yeah?
Yeah, John, that's great. And listen, Gene and John, magic bullet. I need a magic bullet. Gene, if you were in charge of everything in the tennis in the United States, you have the fix-all, end-all, the deal that everybody would rave about. Do you have a magic bullet, anything we need to be doing?
Well, it certainly would take time, but I think one of the callers calling in about high school coaches hit the nail on the head. I believe that the fundamentals of producing good players is by taking good coaches with understanding of the game and also understanding of competition and multiplying that through other coaches at every level that are better and better, that you build a system based on the quality of coaching. Players will come and go, and you might have more or less at any, you know, we had, you know, at the time it was Connors and McEnroe and Garolitis and I were playing at one time, and then you had later, you had, Sampras, Agassi, Courier at different times. So players will come and go, but I believe that your system is good as the body of knowledge and the quality of coaching that coaches widespread are able to teach, to develop players, to bring them along, to bring them to the highest level. And I believe the emphasis has been on sort of taking players away from coaches, getting them in academies, moving them in-house, and somehow taking the existing players. I think it's much more about improving the quality of coaching that will ultimately pay off in players benefiting from that.
Tragically, it's the marketing of the instruction and using the players as the commodity, and that's just pure wrong. Guys, we got to go. Gene, I wanted to say again, much respected, seldom flaunted, but, daggone it, I always bring these things up. My mother said, but the wise man walks with the great and the small in equal dignity, and you sure have done that. And John Texas.
Well said. I would have loved to
be in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
That you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life. It has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'd like to thank very much Gene Mayer. It's been a great honor and privilege to have you on the show. And, of course, John Eagleton, good luck with what you guys are doing out there. And everybody
thank
else,
you,
we'll
Chuck.
See you next
it's been
week.
A pleasure. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm honored. Bye-bye, guys. We'll see you all next week. American Tennis is Coach Chuck Creasy.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.